So I want to welcome my special guest once again, Dr. Dawn Perlmutter. She's been on before, and I want to thank you once again for coming back on Captain Hunter's podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I wanted to have a conversation with you as we just were talking about just a few moments ago before I started recording is your very prophetic announcement that concerning iconoclasm. I want to hope I'm saying that right. Iconoclasm. Right. Yeah. And so it was very prophetic in our last interview and the last time we spoke, just talking about almost what we're seeing right now, right, with this type of icons clashing, people tearing down statues and everything like that. So I really wanted to dig into that again. And what really made me reach out to you is this. I don't know if you follow NASCAR. I do not. But there was an a NASCAR racer who announced because of the Confederate flags being torn down or taken down or no longer allowed during NASCAR races that he was going to quit NASCAR. And I don't know if you heard about that at all.
No, I didn't. I don't follow NASCAR either. But this is happening across the board with the number of significant symbols. And what we are going through is another round of iconoclasm, which just stands for the desecration of sacred images. Every single time throughout history and across cultures, regime change always begins and ends with the destruction and removal of symbols. What we're seeing now is another episode of iconoclasm. Iconoclasm simply means the desecration of sacred images and symbols. And throughout history and across cultures, regime change always begins and ends with the destruction and removal of symbols. It always marks a cultural revolution, which is what we are going through right now. And that's why this started a couple years ago with the Confederate flag. It's always triggered by a particular incident. At that time, it was triggered by the mass murder of 9 parishioners at the historically Black Emmanuel AMC Church in Charlestown. That eventually led to the Confederate flag being removed. Then after the Unite the Right rally in Charleston, we had another episode of Confederate statues being removed. Each time it's triggered by some kind of incident. And this time there's not as much resistance to it as there was before. And I think it's because just the politicians are sort of afraid to push back too hard on this.
Sure. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. So let's talk about, you know, what precipitated all this type of stuff. And of course, I'm going to talk about the recent police and even non-police killings of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd up in Minnesota. Have you followed any of those events?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And what's happening is these incidents, again, are in the context of what's been an ongoing anti-police movement that has been a response to officer-involved shootings of Black people, and that's what began the Black Lives Matter movement with Trayvon Martin, and now it's just because of video, because there's footage of actual things in the news cycle, everyone is seeing it, which is triggering all of the protests and the removal of statues and the demand to defund or even abolish police departments.
Sure, sure. I know that this may not be your area of expertise, but what has been your opinion upon the Floyd incident and the Arbery incident and the Breonna Taylor incident?
Well, the Floyd incident, I'm obviously more familiar with it. It's more recent. Obviously there are always going to be bad tactics, bad police. There's I think always been this, but it's never received this much attention before. I think it needs to be seen in the context of any type of organization is going to have bad apples in it. And unfortunately with police, when you have the use of force, it results in people's deaths. I think the response, again, it's just the timing of it. It has made it sort of the shot heard around the world, where it's almost the last straw with what's a movement that's been going on for a long time. And the movement is part of, if you want me to explain the statues again.
This
ties into the removal of Confederate statues and the removal of Columbus statues is all part of the larger Abolish Columbus Day, which is part of the larger global Indigenous Peoples' Rights Movement. The removal of Confederate statues is also symbolic of slavery, and both of these statues, Columbus and the Confederate statues, they all symbolize colonialism. And colonialism obviously was part of the European settlement and political domination over the rest of the world, and it involved slavery. So what's happening is these are really anti-colonial activists that are, they want to remove the statues because to them they're a symbol not only of slavery, but more so of colonialism, is the ideology and the actions that they're against.
Right. No, I absolutely agree. And I even saw an article today talking about that there was a George Washington monument, I believe it was in New York, that was defaced as well today. And so this is something that admittedly Donald Trump had talked about. Where do you stop with all this? Okay, we're going to get rid of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and all this kind of stuff. So I think that there's a little bit of a mission creep going on here from their perspectives. Go ahead.
Well, I think, again, the statues, all of these statues are considered racist symbols and of America's legacy of slavery and colonizers. And it's not going to stop because it's part of this cultural revolution. And for the people who are removing them, they see the monuments as glorifying white supremacy and memorializing what they consider a treasonous government whose founding principle was based on slavery. So again, there's not going to be any appeasement here. And this is what has happened in every cultural revolution. Every time there's either an insurrection, a war, or just a country's own revolution, the one thing you have to do is to remove all the symbols, all the ideals of the former regime, or else, you will have people that always will go back to it. So I don't know if they're all conscious of when they're doing that, but that is really the sign of what's going on here. I mean, this is why it keeps increasing, each time. It's really a harbinger of a complete revolution in this country.
Well, I was just about to ask you, do you think it's isolated to this country? Because these protests are going around the world.
Yes, and again, for the same reasons. That's true. They had to protect the Winston Churchill statue. They boxed it in. And for the same reasons. They're in the European countries that, for the same exact reasons, that were considered colonizers and capitalists. There's a lot of anti-capitalist ideology going on also. So this is what happens when people rise up. The statues are the first thing, and every kind of symbol, not just statues, flags, symbolic corporations, anything that is going to mark the ideals that they're against will be targets.
Absolutely. I'm glad you talked about the other types of thoughts that are going on, because there's everything that's going on here to me, and I don't claim to be a political analysis or anything like that, but I think that there's something more going on here than simply Black Lives Matter. I think that it has a little bit to do with, remember that Wall Street Occupy movement that was going on. I think that people are fed up across the board with, and I think that probably it's capitalism. Whether they can express this, articulate this, I don't know, but I think that they're fed up with it. I think the COVID virus exploited a lot of many more minorities, African Americans. I just read a report today. Many Native Americans are suffering from and dying from COVID at a higher rates than other persons. So I think that there's a lot more than just Black Lives Matter and police brutality or whatever they think is going on. I think that this is a conglomeration of different types of thoughts. And just people, they're just tired of the current status quo of not having to work two and three and four jobs, not enough pay, no access to healthcare, and we can go on and on about all the social evils. And I think that watching that police officer with his knee in the neck of George Floyd was just enough of what's going on here. So those are my thoughts.
No, correct. Absolutely. It's not just Black Lives Matter movement. In fact, when they had the protest at Standing Rock, this has always been in the context of a global indigenous people's rights movement. So everyone who has been in that, which would be Native Americans, Mexicans, Africans, African Americans, they all are coming together now. That's the difference. Everybody's coming together now. And it's also considered a form of class. It's about class warfare. It's about identity politics. There's so many different things, but they're all joining forces, which they've never done before. And the other thing about the statues, which is kind of interesting, is that it's not just knocking them down or removing them, because they're not just doing that. It's actually a ritual that's happening here. They're ritually executing these statues. They're hanging them. They're beheading them. They're executing them, there's a long tradition in history of doing that to statues, because they are symbols of the politics of the politicians, and it becomes almost a cathartic ritual to not just topple them, but to execute them.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Yeah. I've been very surprised at that. Matter of fact, the first time I saw someone removing him, I saw the noose around their neck, and I was like, wow, okay. I thought they were just kind of just knocking it over, but they, as you mentioned, they're doing some ritualistic execution, effigy type of stuff to these things. I wanted to ask you about, before I ask another question, I did not know that all these Confederate flags and statues and plaques were all over the country. I saw, I think it was the Wall Street, not the Wall Street Journal. I think the New York Times had did the publication, and they were all up in Nevada and Montana and places where the Confederacy didn't reach. So that actually will tie me into the next question is, you know, what people will say, it's particularly about the Confederate flag. It's not about racism. It's about history and my ancestors, and they fought for their rights. Can you address that for me? I don't know what your position is. What is your position when people say these types of things, especially as I mentioned, when they're not, it's not just in the South, it's in Montana. There's some Confederate plaques in New York State and in Connecticut where I live. I did not know that.
Oh, I guess they're everywhere. The thing about symbols is that the meanings change over time. And historically, I have to tell you, I do get upset when I see the statues being destroyed, only because I am really fond of historical buildings, historical statues. I don't mind them being removed and maybe put in some kind of museum or wherever they're going, because once they're destroyed, that is sort of a historical document that's being destroyed, just from an art history perspective. But in terms of the symbols themselves, they change over time, and they have always been a harbinger of what is going to happen. I mean, these statues have been there for years, and probably people walked by them didn't even notice them. But the fact that everybody's being educated on the colonialism, they're being educated, it's all in the context of, we don't want these symbols of racism among us anymore. So they're both legitimate positions. You can see this is what happens when you have change. You're always going to have people who are from one position who want to maintain, they want to maintain the status quo. They don't want cultural change. They want their icons and heroes to remain where they are. And then on the other side, you have people who do not want, they're leading the revolution. They want change. They want everybody to recognize what's going on. So I don't know if that answers the question, but.
Well, it does. And I appreciate the position that I'm putting you in as a scholar. And, you know, I can appreciate your answer. I'm going to be a little bit more personal in this. And obviously I did not know all this, kind of stuff as far as the locations where they were. My own perception of them is that well, first of all, the battle flag, and I can almost quote Robert Lee, or I believe it was him, after the South had lost the war, and they asked him what he thought that he should do with all these battle flags and the Confederate monuments, whatever, and he said that we. And I'm kind of paraphrasing. He said along the lines of, we need to put it aside now and go with and unite the country, essentially, is what he's saying. And so when I understand and read history, that many of these monuments, statues, plaques, even the resurgence of the battle flag resurged in the 1940s, right? And a lot of this stuff wasn't in the right after the Civil War or even in the 1910s or 20s. A lot of the stuff resurfaced. And they erected these monuments in the 1940s. So that tells me that it wasn't necessarily about remembering our past history as much as it's the assertion of white supremacy. And so were there some people who thought that? Yeah, probably. Absolutely. But I think that the vast majority of persons were trying to hold on to some type of white supremacy. Some of the state flags, South Carolina and Mississippi. I don't know the exact years, but even they added that battle flag during the rise of the Civil Rights Movement, and I mean including the 1940s or so. So based on that, I mean, I can't see how it's not about the symbol of white supremacy rather than the symbol of heritage and all that kind of stuff. That's my
well, what you're describing is basically whether they called it this or not was an information operation, and they slid these symbols back in and rallied people around them again. So yes, it's probably you're probably accurate that that was what was going on. And that is how these symbols work. You get people to rally around a symbol or to destroy a symbol because you're trying to introduce an ideology. So you're correct. Back in the 40s, that's probably exactly what they were doing and succeeded. And now we're having the reaction to that. So there's always going to be, I always say symbolic violence always precedes actual violence. And what we're seeing with the statues, with the removal, the war on statues is really going to precede this revolution, this cultural revolution. It always does. And then there'll be, what'll be interesting is the new symbols that replace them. That'll be interesting to see which ones emerge, what heroes emerge, who will be on those pedestals. That's what we need to see next.
Yeah, back to this NASCAR person. I'm mentioning that because I wanted to I wanted to see if I can share my screen with you. Does this have that option to share screens?
Yes, it should at the bottom.
Yeah, I see it. Okay, let me try to exit full screen here. And I want to have you, you said you weren't familiar with this, so I wanted to show it to you. That's not what I want. Let's do screen share. Let me try to...
Okay, I see it.
Yeah, I got to find the article. I got so many articles open here. Oh, here it is. Oh, okay. So here's the article about this race car driver. NASCAR truck racer Ray Ciccarelli says he quit over the company's decision to ban a Confederate flag. And this is from CNN News. And so here's a quote. Here's a quote. Well, it's been a fun ride and a dream come true, but if this is the direction NASCAR is headed, we will not participate after 2020 season is over. I don't believe in kneeling during the anthem, nor taking people, it's supposed to be people's, I guess, right to fly whatever flag they love, Ciccarelli wrote on Facebook. Then he added, I could care less about the Confederate flag, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them racist at all, and all you're doing is effing one group in order to cater to another. And I ain't spend the money we are to participate in political BS. So everything is for sale. And it continues. Then he deleted the post here. So what I wanted to ask you, when I try to get back here to the stop share. Okay. So I wanted to ask you, how is it that people, and I know you're not a psychologist, but just do the best with this you can. how is it that people can have such an affinity and affection. Now, he's not saying that. He's saying he doesn't care about the Confederate flag. But how can people have such an affinity and have such an affection for the American flag, have such a problem with Colin Kaepernick and the rest of the NFL players who were kneeling, right, trying to protest peacefully, and I'll get to that in a little bit, and then also fly the Confederate flag, which, again, just goes into my argument that it really was a white supremacy. And once again, their idea is, and what they're telling people, is that this is about heritage and history and all that kind of stuff. But this heritage and history was about people who tried to overthrow the government. So it doesn't jive, is my point. So how do people do that? Is it just a matter of cognitive dissonance or lying or what?
Well, I think it's all these subcultures, and NASCAR is a big cultural identity for a number of people. And I think it's not as much the Confederate flag as much as for them, it doesn't represent white supremacy as much as it represents a way of life. They feel that their way of life is now being threatened, and they're being told that they no longer have the freedom to do what they want to do.
What freedoms are they missing, though? That's what freedoms are they missing?
I think it's that they feel that they should be able to fly whatever flag they want, and that having it being told they can't do it is an affront. Whether it means white supremacy or not, I think it's coming down to this again, people just feeling that they want to be able to do what they've always done. And especially with a culture like NASCAR, which has always been connected to that flag, whether it represents white supremacy for them or for many of them, it probably doesn't. I think it's just they don't want to be told they can't do something that they've always done. It's a change. They're trying to preserve their way of life. Does that make sense?
It does, but it makes, and I think that they believe that, but again, I don't think it flies in certain places, certain cultures. Okay, so the argument that you laid out is that they are being told that they can't fly certain flags, and that's what Ciccarelli was saying there. Again, to me, it's just a symbol of white supremacy. So I'm having a hard time, and I think that many people are really having a hard time with seeing it as something different than white supremacy. Again, the analogy of, well, not even in the analogy, if you do go over to Germany, right, they don't have those symbols of the Nazis anywhere, right? And nobody has ever said that people in their own private houses, or even if you wanted to walk into a NASCAR and have a Stars and Bars t-shirt on, that you couldn't do it. What they're saying is you can't have them on the cars or in the pit crews and flying above the, in conjunction with the American flag. And that, how do people not see that as forget the racial argument. You got to see that as treason. These people were treasonous.
Well, again, I think it's just because it's happening now at this point in time. If it wasn't happening, maybe in the context of everything else that's going on, all the political division, that there might have been a more positive response to it. But I just think that everybody feels they're being forced to do things that they've always done. And there's just resistance on all sides. So symbols don't fall easy. They have to, that's why they're usually taken when a country is taken over. And a lot of people, that's why they remove them. The whole reason when a country is conquered and they remove all the symbols is because they don't want people to remember their past. They don't want them to have any of those ideologies anymore. And that's the only way to do it. So there's going to be resistance. There's always going to be resistance. And usually it doesn't happen nicely. It usually happens during a war revolution.
Colin Kaepernick kneeled during the national anthem, as we just read there. We probably know that. Was his symbolic gestures that he tried to take peacefully, and now because people didn't listen to what he was talking about, now we're in this mess. What do you think about Colin Kaepernick's attempts to do something symbolically and draw attention to what he perceived and what many people are perceiving? What are your thoughts about that, Colin Kaepernick and his symbolic gestures?
Well, I think the taking the knee was, he started a whole nother kind of movement, a whole nother gesture that ended up snowballing into the NFL having to make all kinds of changes. I'll be honest with you, I didn't think that it was the appropriate place to do that. I think that he definitely made his position known and started a whole movement around that, but it has resistance because it was seen as disrespecting the American flag and disrespecting the national anthem. And in that context, it just upset a lot of people too.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And again, I hate to keep harping on this, but you know, he disrespected the American flag, but flying the stars and bars next to it isn't. It's just ridiculous to me. That's a ridiculous argument. But I do agree with you that, you know, he's tried. I think that as far as him not doing it there, I mean, should we be I'm not marching. Should people be marching in the streets and in everything and stopping highways? No, we shouldn't be doing that, but we're trying to get people's attention. And so he tried to get people's attention through a nonviolent means. Now it's turned to this complete mess. What do you foresee going forward, right? You talked about what the new symbols are going to be. What if this is a hill, are we in the middle of the crescendo here? Are we going down from here, going to plateau, or is it going to get worse? What do you foresee?
I think it's going to get worse. I think that almost every symbol is going to be under attack until they're either removed or maintained, depending on how this ends up. Even, for example, the Blue Lives Matter flag. I mean, there's a lot of almost every symbol, anything associated with police has become controversial. Also, the Punisher symbol, which a lot of the police use and use it in conjunction with Blue Lives Matter, is being seen as problematic. There's just going to be a lot more things, like you said, the other presidents, because this is the nature of the revolution. I think that it's going to keep increasing. And especially with the technology we have now, we have the technology to show all of these different incidents and to also rally people more. I don't know what the new symbols are going to be. It'll be interesting to see. But I do think that we're headed toward a very dangerous time, and that's what happens in cultural revolutions. And it's, you know, you're always going to have people trying to maintain their way of life, and you're always going to have people who are trying to go into a new direction, and that's where we're at. Mm-hmm.
Do you foresee, I know some people are, let me just say, some people are foreseeing some type of civil war, race-based war. Are you seeing anything like that?
Well, there's actually a lot of talk about a second American Revolution. I don't know if you're aware that there's code word for that. It's called the Boogaloo. That's on the far right, people who are advocating, you know, who are Second Amendment gun rights activists. They use the word Boogaloo because when they would say the Second American Revolution, they were being thrown off of Facebook and Twitter. So Boogaloo became code. And then that started being recognized. And so they changed that to the expression Big Luau. So if you'll notice at the COVID lockdown protests, there were men wearing Hawaiian shirts under like gun vests, and that might have seemed odd. Well, the Hawaiian shirt also became sort of a symbol for the Second American Revolution, for the gun rights movement. So you have people on the right who are definitely talking about this. Then you have people on the far left who, I don't know if you're aware also that there's now a lot of far left gun clubs. That are the John Brown Gun Club is one that's popular with the far left, and they are the man who attacked the ICE facility with weapons was a member of Antifa and part of the gun club. There's a number of far left gun clubs, which you never saw before. There was always sort of part of the anti, you know, that always sort of went hand in hand. So now you have people arming up everywhere. And that's not, that's what scares me. You have the Huey Newton gun club that was always there. There's a lot of branches of that. Even some of the Black Lives Matter leaders are saying that they're going to have their armed police, because that's what the Panthers did back in the day, peace officers. And so everybody is now arming and talking about revolution, whether it's a cultural revolution or whether it's the second American revolution. And I hope that never happens, but there's definitely more chatter than there's ever been with this type of thing.
Yeah, I did not know. I heard the term boogaloo. Is it boogaloo or googaloo with a G or a B?
It's B. It comes from the expression electric boogaloo. It's amazing how these things evolve, but it was just reduced to boogaloo. And that, if you just Google that brings up all kinds of gun rights activists. Even the expression igloo became part of that too. You'll see igloos. The reason they went to these words is because they were being thrown off of social media sites, and they had to start doing it that way. And what surprised me more, now that doesn't surprise me, that's something I've always seen. What surprised me is the amount of far left groups, the Redneck Revolt, that are arming up. You didn't see that before. You never saw that before.
Well, I gotta be honest with you. I've been telling my friends to kind of get themselves ready, because, you know, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist or some type of negative Nelly, but the idea is, if we've known since, you know, those boys out in Montana, who was the guy that was killed? Not Waco, the other one there, in Montana or Idaho or wherever it was, they had that.
I know what you're talking about.
We're having brain farts here. So we've known since those days that there's been these armed camps out there, and they're all racist. So listen, I know that Waco, that guy wasn't David Koresh, but these other guys are all running around here in Idaho and Montana and in Indiana and so it only makes sense for the other side to arm up. And I'm not saying that. Listen, I don't want this at all. I'm hoping that we can have that our president or administrators or whoever can really crush this and really bring the country together and really say some really healing type of words and let us know it's all going to be okay and really bring about some stability. But I'm in fear with you, but I can't say to people, don't prepare yourself.
No, I understand, and that's why they're doing it. People who were always against carrying arms, that's why they've changed their philosophy about it. It's like I said, symbolic violence always precedes actual violence. Today it's the statues, tomorrow it's people.
Listen, I'm in fear with you. I really don't want that to happen. That would be so catastrophic for the U.S., for all of us. Let's talk about the abolition of police. People are talking about that. They're pushing for it. Police, prisons, ICE. What is your position about that? Is it going to happen, et cetera?
Well, I think that the defunding is starting to happen. And I also think that that in some places they may replace them with the model. Interestingly, a lot of these movements, the Black Lives Matter movement, the Cop Watch movements, they have always been for abolishing the police and replacing them with what they consider community policing or community models of policing. That they have detailed treaties on this. They've written extensively on this. In fact, there's been college courses. There's been people who have been trained to facilitate this, Interesting way, what they're proposing is what policing kind of originally was supposed to be, where it was your neighborhood officer who grew up there, who knew everyone. That's the model they're going with. It's not just abolished. They have detailed ideas already about how they want to really enforce their own protection. And I think it may happen in one or two places. I don't think it's going to happen across the whole United States. I think might work somewhere and not work other places. It's a very utopian idea. I don't know if they're factoring in the gangs and the drug traffickers and the human traffickers. There's a lot of really bad stuff going on that you need highly trained police officers for. But in some small communities, you may not. So I think the defunding, this has been community taking over this situation. It's been an idea that's been out there for a number of years, and this is the closest they've ever gotten. And I think places like Minneapolis may actually be the first time we see it, or Seattle. I don't think we'll see it in New York or Philadelphia. It wouldn't be successful in certain cities. But I've never thought it would get this far. I mean, I did trainings on this years ago, and I never thought it would get this far this soon. So. I think it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I don't know if you know anyone who's from those groups. I've reached out to about three or four different persons, and I think I talked to you about this before. I talked to a number of people. I've actually thought about changing the name of my podcast because I can't get people to call me back. Well, a lot of people anyway. So a lot of times I think that they may think that I'm kind of pro-police. And I'm just trying to call balls and strikes and just trying to have a conversation with people. And when I say the police are right, they're right. When I say the police are wrong, I say that they're wrong. When the community's right, the community's wrong. Matter of fact, I'm going to do a live event on Facebook right after this, talking about this new Atlanta shooting, in which I think that people should not be rallying around behind it. I think the guy was completely wrong. So, but anyway, yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. I did download a personal somebody's PDF or something like 136 pages about us to police. And so I hope that somebody will listen to this. And I'm looking to that's where it's going to start to go. I've kind of rambled on here. I wanted to have someone on. If you know anyone from any type of abolish the police, abolish the prisons movement, if you would point them in my directions, because I'd love to have a conversation with them. I've reached out to a number of them. I can't get anyone to call me back. So once again, I don't know if they think I'm an agent or I just want to argue with them or whatever, but I'm really genuinely interested in what these models look like. I do plan to read this 136 page PDF that I just downloaded today, to really understand where we're going with this. And I've understood too, when I went back to school, I did take a class and they talked about it. We talked about it a little bit and how we want to go toward and how people want to go towards a more officer friendly officer, where we move into direction of the government essentially addressing homelessness, mental illness, and things like that, which I would agree with, right? I've often said the police are doing way too much. We're undertrained, and so therefore, if you train everyone to, if you as police officers, if we're always taught that people are going to hurt us, we have a plan to kill everyone. And this is the way we've been trained to think. Therefore, when you get somebody with a mental illness who can't help their actions because of whatever's going on, then we go into this fight or flight mode when it really should not be that way. And so I can agree with some of the ideas that they have as far as moving that the funding towards other things. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. So I think that's really all I want to kind of talk to you about. I really appreciate you coming back on.
No problem.
What do you have coming up? I know I'm going to be sitting in on a seminar that you have going on. I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you so much. But what else are you working on? Any other research? When you had you on before, you talked about a lot of gang stuff, and guys were calling me up like, "Hey, have her back on for more gang stuff. We enjoy listening about that." So
I know.
do you have anything going on as far as the gang stuff, more symbology, any crazy crime scenes and stuff?
Prior to the COVID crisis and what's happening now, I was actually doing a lot of training on pedophile and human trafficking symbols and identifiers. That was very popular trainings because I was really, it was amazing how they were using everything from emojis to certain websites, certain things they were very popular trainings that I think were very helpful. Also, I was getting into a lot of the conspiracy theory movements that were going on, and a lot of for some reason, symbols go along hand in hand with conspiracy theory movements. At some point, I think I'll definitely pursue that because that is never stops. That never stops. And that is just so disheartening. After Ferguson, I had done a number of trainings years ago on these different groups and especially the Antifa movement. I wrote about the paramilitary arm of that. And that's really disturbing in a lot of ways. But I'm thinking I will get back to that. I also have a little a law enforcement guide to the Cop Watch movement on Amazon. It's only $2.99.
No, I'm gonna get that. Is it on Kindle or is it?
It's on Kindle. It's a Kindle book. It's the a law enforcement guide to the Cop Watch and Ice Watch movement, and it's really an excellent tool because it has links to over 100 different sites that. If you really want to know, it also has things on that are crossing over now, the different projects on police excessive force are mentioned in that and links to those. So I wanted people to have it, but for some reason it's not being seen or something. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. And right now I'm going to be putting out, I do my law enforcement bulletins. I'm doing a special report on the Antifa movement with all of their identifiers. And
I have to sign up for that again because I was not getting those. It's supposed to be an email coming, right?
Yeah, they go to spam. Unfortunately, sometimes with these MailChimp things, they end up going to spam.
Okay, I'll check that. I'll check that. And if not, I'll sign up again. But
yeah.
Okay.
I'm just for 3 months, it was really slow with COVID, just being terrified of all of that. And now I think you're right. I think when you said the combination of everybody being locked down and the anxiety that was causing. I mean, it was causing me anxiety, not knowing what that was or where it was coming from or how bad it was. I think that, and then just this recent incident just was the perfect storm to trigger everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not getting any better. So yeah, I've been busy. And I think after tomorrow, you'll probably have even more questions. But I've been, everything I've worked on with the symbolism, the iconoclasm goes all the way back to my doctoral dissertation, like 30 years ago. I mean, I saw this happening then. It's all coming full circle. All the different groups are now crossing over and joining each other, which I find fascinating. It's just fascinating. And I think the technology has helped that. But it's also patterns of culture. This is not anything new in the history of the world. This has always happened. It's just we've never been able to see it in real time before. It's moving at the speed of light. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, listen, I have you on as many times. I mean, I really, really appreciate it. I love talking to you. I got to be honest, when the first time that we talked, I thought we were going to have an argument. But you were so nice, and you kind of agree with me. I agree with you, and we did it again today. And I really, really appreciate it, because the first time I went to have you on because you wrote something, I think it was in defense of Blue Lives Matter, and just yeah. to kind of, and I actually reached out to Blue Lives Matter again, and they blocked me on Twitter. So
yeah, so, that's not good either.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, I actually kind of thought it was funny. You know, I reached out to them the same time I reached out to you back in September or so of last year. And then I just reached out to them, I think it was yesterday, and they blocked me. So, it is what it is. But, I mean, to me, it's just obvious, and as we agreed upon last time we spoke, that they just co-opted the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, there's no need to do that. There's no need mm-hmm. to do that. So, and I'm really disappointed that they did it. And it even shows even more than the fact that they blocked me and don't want to have a conversation. So
yeah, that I always keep the channels open. That's the problem. Everybody needs to be talking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've talked to a lot of other people. Well, at least I tried to talk to other people. I try to talk to everyone who I agree with, who I don't agree with, because I want to have a conversation with people. And a lot of times I still haven't heard back from Black Lives Matter. I reached out to them and I know that they're getting my emails. I mean, and I see them all over the other different newspapers and stuff, or news organizations. So you obviously somebody's contacting you and they're getting, and you're accepting their invitation. So why not accept mine? Am I not a big enough platform? I don't know, but at least here's a police officer who wants to have a conversation and find out where you're coming from. And maybe we can help, and maybe I'll agree, maybe we won't, but at least have the conversation. So.
Oh, that's interesting. You really are having a hard time getting people.
I really am. I reached out to the Indian, this is probably right up your alley, actually, the Native American mascot controversy, right, that was going on. Going on. And so I reached out to a museum, reached out to like two or three other academics who are Native American themselves. And two Native American persons said, I can't do it, but here, reach out to this person. And this person was white. And the white person came on the show and did it. So why you know, actual Native Americans wouldn't want to talk about this, I don't know. But, you know.
Yeah, I guess they're afraid of some kind of backlash or something. I mean, oh, that's another project that I'm seriously considering. The red dress. I don't know if you saw the missing. There's a... There's an interesting thing that they started with all those missing women in the indigenous, the Native Americans. I mean, thousands of women have gone missing. And they started a red dress project where they just hang the red dresses up like against the snow. And it's become a powerful symbol. I'm thinking of if I do, you know, start researching the ritual homicides again, that's definitely the direction I want to go in, because I just looked into some of the cases and I'm thinking there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
That's disturbing. Yeah. And I found, again, like you said, not easy to get contacts at all.
Well, I find the contacts is that having them contact me back. So I don't know. So can you give us a website again? And
it's symbolintelligence.com. And just we do everything. We're a tiny little group that specializes in everything from codes, symbols, symbolic evidence, including trauma. In other words, you know, how a body may be positioned, or every kind of celestial. It's just any form of symbolic evidence, dates, times, graffiti, codes. So we keep really busy. There's a lot of symbolic evidence connected to all kinds of things. And it's been a really busy time. Like I said, even even the pedophiles have, you know, human traffickers, child human traffickers are now figuring out how to send each other little coded things. It's quite disturbing.
So I was watching two things I want to mention. I was watching a Netflix Hannibal, right? The story of Hannibal Lecter. Not that he's a real person. I don't think
he's a real person. I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or did they make another thing out of it?
Well, it's old to me. It's three. Oh, it was okay. Starting in 2015. I never saw it before, so I was kind of scrolling. And I'm like, what the heck is this? So, and I, you know, I enjoyed Silence of the Lambs, and so I watched it every single episode, right? And so it's funny because it's about a young Hannibal Lecter, or younger Hannibal Lecter, and he's actually helping the FBI solve these mysteries about these symbolic killings and all this kind of stuff. So it's really good. And every time I watch an episode, I'm thinking about you.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah.
And I did have a Netflix. I was in a Netflix series, I guess, a couple of months ago. Again, it's always pre-COVID and after COVID. It seems like everything that happened before disappeared. But that just aired on I think Investigation Discovery or one of the channels. So
What's the name of that?
Oh, it was on the Midwest. I'll send you the link.
Yeah, I'd like to check that out. Definitely like to check that out.
Yeah, that was another horrible homicide. They seemed to, when I first started doing this, I told you, nobody believed me. I would do these trainings. People didn't believe me. Then when they started believing it, and I was getting a lot of requests for documentaries and things, I was even going to do a series on Discovery Channel on all of these cases. And at the last minute, they pulled it because they thought it would be too shocking. Well, that was 15 years ago. Now nothing is too shocking. Now they're instructing people on how to ritually murder on these shows.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. We've come a long way.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So thank you. I'm definitely going to reach out to you again. I'd like to continue this. And if you do that red dress thing or whatever we got going on, I'm sure that there's something. Oh, that's what I want to tell you. The other thing was, as far as the pedophiles is, you know, when people got locked down and stuff, this probably is not up your alley. But when people were getting locked down and stuff with the COVID, they were saying that there was going to be a rise and spike in pedophiles because now they're home, the kids are home, and parents who have to go or considered essential workers can't watch over them and stuff. And so I really thought that was kind of sad to read and hear that, you know. So I don't know what the numbers are today, but I know that I read that when this whole thing started, that people are going to be very much on the lookout for that, which is very sad.
Domestic abuse too, yeah.
Yeah, and domestic violence, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you once again, Dr. Dawn Perlmutter. I really, really appreciate it. Once again, great conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Okay, you too. Talk to you again.
Bye.